Yo, what's up? It's your boy, Swag 100, man. We live, Goat Vibe Interviews, man. Y'all know what we do. All big business, fashion, and entertainment, man. And no other than today, my guest, the CEO, Chief Executive Editor of Floss Magazine.
Yo, what's up, y'all? This is Paris, Editor-in-Chief, CEO of Floss Magazine. You know what I mean? Like, yo, Swag, man, thank you for having me. You know what I mean? It's a pleasure to come up here and just kind of chill with you in your, in right. your studio, in your environment.
Yeah, definitely. No, we definitely thank you for even coming and just taking the time out, you know, with us, Paris. So, you know what I mean? That's real humbling, and I'm very appreciative of that.
All day, man. Same here. Absolutely.
But, yeah, I want to dig right in. This is what we do on Goat Vibes. So, just let you know, Goat Vibes is for the legends and the future legends.
All right.
You know? And Goat Vibes, you know, we try to get enough information that's going to be impactful for people that might be walking in your shoes later on.
Absolutely. Let's
so
do it.
I'm going to dig into the business a little bit.
Let's do it. You know? Let's do it.
How did you wind up just deciding you, you know, can you give us a background on the magazine game? How did you decide you wanted to become a publisher or involved in the publishing world, you know, of publications and magazine and fashion?
Right. So, you know, I was in the music industry for a long time. I did production, did a bunch of different things in the music industry. Then I got a job with an independent label as an A&R. Because I figure, you know, I work with the independents. This is where I work my way up. But I got more control over what I'm involved with. So long story short, a lot of the artists kind of didn't understand the game. You know what I mean? Like, the studio became like a hangout spot, smoke weed, chill with girls or whatever. And I'm like, yo, we here to work. And at some point, I just felt like I was in this dark place where I had no control of my own destiny.
Right.
Because I was dependent on the artist to create the lyrics. I was dependent on the producer to create the tracks. I was dependent on the studio, the mix downs, the masterings, the DJs to play it and everything. So, you know, I had to find something that I can do that I had complete control over. And music was one of my things. I grew up loving it, doing production. I got family members in music. I always loved fashion. And it was just like, yo, there's nothing out there that's combining the music and the fashion together. You know what I'm saying? Everything else was just like hip hop. So I came up with this concept to create a magazine that would be the cross between GQ magazine and Vogue magazine with a hip hop flip. You know what I'm saying? That would address men and women. And for a long time, I sat down with a friend of mine, a good friend of mine, trying to come up with a name. I started studying colors, like all the different colors, what they meant. And I came up with the red color because, you know, traffic lights, like when people see red, they just stop.
Right.
So I'm like, all right, I don't have the money to do the major marketing to go against my competitors. So I'm going to go with this red color. And then my boy came up with the name Floss. You know, we used to be out in Cali a lot, and that was a big word everybody was throwing around up there. So we just went with it, man. It was like Floss Magazine, the red, the white background and everything. And that was it. We went on from there and just kind of launched it, man.
Right. So I see, like, you know, throughout, you know, the beginning stages, man, y'all had some major placements, you know.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on those?
As far as the covers or?
Yes, the covers.
So, like, as far as the covers, you know, like, again, I used to work in the industry, and if I went in the studio back in those days, it was almost like competition or whatever. Nobody wanted you to hear what they was doing because, you know, they don't want it duplicated on your stuff. You know what I'm saying? And so, but once I started a magazine, I actually really got fired from that label also to continue to push me, what helped push me to start the magazine. Because at a certain point, all I was doing was just researching colors, researching fonts, like what the fonts on the front of the magazine was going to look like. And then after a while, it was just like, yo, you know, we can't work here. No, you can't work here no more. This
you were so focused on building your brand.
Yeah. Because I
knew, could see.
Right. And because I knew, like, those artists at the time, and they had... Like, right now, you could go on like, YouTube and a bunch of other places. People are posting the songs. The songs got 130-something thousand views. It's still being sold or whatever. But I knew they didn't understand the moment that we were in at that time. And that wasn't the place where I needed to be at. You know what I mean?
Right.
So now when I started a magazine, you know, luckily, our first cover we launched with was Jay-Z.
Right.
That's when Jay-Z was on fire. Like, and that... like that was a blessing because we didn't need to do much marketing. Like people saw that white cover, Jay-Z sitting there, the red floss behind him. He had the American flags wrapped around his arm because this was like less than a year or about a year after 9/11. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it was just like the sky was the limit after that.
Right.
Yeah.
And
so
and the relationship with Jay-Z gave you the relationships with the Ye's and
with the record labels, right? Okay. Gave me the relationships with the 50 Cent, the Kanye. Not so much really, but it gave Floss that recognition as
a brand.
And then also like going back a little bit, since I didn't have the money to do the marketing promotion against my competitors, I remember something, I think it was from Out of the Bible. Somebody, I don't know if it was Moses, they said if you can't bring the mountain to you, then go to the mountain.
Right.
So I tried to figure out like where is this mountain at that I can make like promotional copies of this magazine, this concept, this idea, where's that mountain at? And I kept picking my brain that whole summer. And almost like this time of the year, like around July, I found that there was something in Las Vegas called a magic show. Where it's like a fashion thing. They have like one stadium for men, one stadium for women, one stadium for kids. And although it's fashion, it's still a lot of music people there because they got to, you know, see what's coming out for the artists to dress them and all that.
Right.
So I brought the magazine there, 10,000 copies. And for like a week, we went around from booth to booth to booth and we gave a copy to everybody and took their business cards. Mm. Then when I got back to New York, all I did for like that next 2-3 weeks was call hundreds of numbers. Like, hey, remember us, Floss Magazine? They're like, yeah, I remember you. You were the editor. You also the model, the photographer or whatever.
Right, right.
You know, being silly about it. But, yeah, that's how the love developed. Mm.
So, yeah, man, I understand, you know, actually being hands-on when you're dealing with your brand, you know, because actually putting yourself in front of those people with your product, you know, and then you got the right people on the cover, got some good stories in the inside. They're gonna bite down like, yo, this is something we've been missing. Like, where was this? How come I don't know about this? So you was actually like a direct marketing,
right?
You know, with a purpose though. You know what I'm saying?
Because
some people don't even know they direct marketing if they doing a positive thing or a bad thing doing it. But you sound like you had your plan already and it worked in your favor because did another form of marketing. You was doing cold calls. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
it's funny. You look at it like that. I never even looked at it like that.
I look at it like that. You know, I'm a multimedia specialist. So I got to focus on a lot of marketing strategies and skill sets and look at different things like that. So when you was explaining it to me, I'm like, yo, oh, man, that was brilliant. I didn't even know you didn't know that you was doing that. But that's what you was doing.
To that extent. Yeah. It was just, you know what I'm saying? Like, when your back is against the wall, man, you got two choices. You can stand there and die, or you can fight back.
Right.
No matter what. You know what I mean? So, at that point, like, my back was against the wall. My mom told me to hang in there. My sisters told me to hang in there. Like, whatever you need, we got you, this and that. Just hang in there. And I told them my idea. Like, I told the idea to a lot of my friends. They like, magazine? What you know about a magazine, man? You're not a publisher. You don't know this. You don't know that. But it's like, whatever you don't know, you can learn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And also, you can learn from your failures. Like, failure, the best thing that can happen to an entrepreneur is failure because you learn from it. You know what I mean? You get up, you dust yourself off, you learn from it, and you move forward.
Right. So how do you feel about, is it a downgrade or is it an upscale with today's game as far as magazine? Because I see that a lot of print magazines, they're not even in rotation of print anymore because of the online game. So you was able to see both sides, you know?
Yeah. So the way I see that, man, it's like a hill in the middle of the fight, right? And then you just got to get over that hill. So for a while, we kept printing when everybody else stopped. We kept printing. And then it got to the point where it didn't make sense no more. So now we had to rebrand and kind of learn the new terrain that we were fighting on.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that terrain is digital. So now we're just going full, whatever we were doing in print, we're just going full digital with it.
Right.
Because we always just, you know, me and my team, we would sit back and talk about it. Like, we always just say, well, you know what, let's hold back and we'll come out with one or two print issues a year. But it's like, things change. You got to roll with the punches.
Right.
You know? Another one of my boys told me, like, if you look at a tree in a storm, the tree sways, right, because of the storm. But if the tree stood still, the storm would break it. It would snap.
Right.
And so that's what we've been doing, is just trying to sway and find our way through the storm. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right, right, yeah. right. Yeah, because, well, one thing to look at the digital side of it is that you can get a lot of stories out, you know, right. at once.
Right.
You know, that's great because I know with print, I'm not going to say you're limited to clients, but, you know, you only going to put and publish so many.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But with online, you're allowing some of the writers to get stories in mm-hmm. that probably wouldn't get stories into the publication, you know.
Right.
So I feel like that's on that scale, I feel like that's major, you know, a good change, you know, yeah. for it. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And even print, man, like when print started dying, a lot of the printers went out of business. So, like, we started printing from China. But the way I found out about China is trying to find, you know, because we couldn't afford, like, the printers that were around.
Right.
As many went out of business, the prices went up. So we called up a couple of prisons. I called up a couple of prisons trying to see if they had print shops that could print magazines.
Right.
I found one in Texas, and the guy told me, yeah, they could print it, but, you know, these are prisoners. So if you have contact numbers and emails in there,
right.
they may try to scam these people, so I wouldn't advise it. So he put me on to the printers in China.
Okay.
He's like, why don't you print, look at China or India or whatever? And I went towards China, got some good positive feedback about their quality, and that was it, man. Like, their stuff was dope. I think the first issue that I printed from China was probably the Kanye West cover or the Fabulous cover, one of those two. But it was, you know what I mean? Like, their quality was dope. Everything was, like, really, really dope. So, but, yeah, with digital, like, in print, you could do but so many pages, right? And you got to pay for all the pages, shipping, pay for customs, and a bunch of other distribution and a bunch of other stuff. But with digital, it's just all right there. The costs are lower.
Yep.
Income is lower also, but the cost is lower.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, right? What do you like about the game more? You like the music side of it, or you like the fashion side of it?
Wow, that's a dope question, man. That's a rough one. Wow, man. That's a hard one. If I had to pick one, I would probably say the fashion side of it. You know what I mean? And the reason why is because, like, fashion is just everything. You know, fashion is, like, the way people see you is the way you see yourself. Mm-hmm. And without fashion, the music, like, the artists wouldn't really be idolized, probably, like, to the extent that they are. Because every artist has an image, and that image is based around their fashion.
Right.
You know what I mean? So fashion was like a very... That's why when I came up with the idea, it had to be a combination of the two, music and fashion.
Right.
Because fashion is like very, very important. You know, there were times when I would go to showrooms, like some of the times we'd pull stuff. Deborah Guignard is here. Shout out to Deborah, our stylist premier.
Yes.
You know, thank you for all the times and everything. But, like, we would go to showrooms. Sometimes I would go to the showroom by myself, even just to pull something or return something. I'd be in Tim's, the baggy jeans, the baggy T-shirt.
Right.
Get on the elevator and people are clutching their purses. You know what I'm saying? But then I get on the elevator like this. So I go in on a meeting like this. It's like, hey, how you doing? Excuse me, sir. Who are you here to see? You know, now yep. I'm sir. You know what I'm saying? So
yep. Yeah, man. They definitely play the switch-up game. Because that's sometimes you got to change your appearance to be accepted a certain type of way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Sometimes you belong in certain rooms, but you're not dressed and you're not prepared to be in that room.
Right,
you know?
Right.
To get accepted in that room. You know what I mean? So, yeah, man, I definitely know about changing up the look. I always look at fashion like it's a freedom of expression without words.
Right. That's dope.
You know?
Right.
Like you said, it show you who you are.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's crazy. I really got a broad mind. Like, you know, in Philly, you really could tell what part of Philly somebody's from by how they dress.
Oh, word.
You can.
Oh, that's what's up.
You know, like, yeah. I could tell this person from uptown, or this person might be more from north or south Philly.
Wow,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even when you travel a lot, you start to notice, like, people, regardless if this side of Cali dress different than this side of Cali,
right.
me being from Philly,
right.
I know you from Cali when right. I see you
right.
based on how you dress. You ain't even got to say nothing to me. So I don't know if it's other people out there like me, but clothes and objects or an abstract and all that, that's an identifier for me.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, you know, fashion is definitely, I would say, I'm not going to, I wouldn't say it's bigger than music, but I would say, you know, I'm more so compelled to music as I mean fashion as well, right, more than music.
Right.
You know.
Right. And if you look at some of the big, I'm sorry, man.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Now, if you look at some of the big brands right now, right, a lot of the, not even right now, man, for like the last two decades, a lot of their creative directors, hip hop artists that they snatched back, like Kanye, like Pharrell, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And the list just goes on
ASAP.
That they snatched, right, like ASAP, right, to come back and put that touch to bring now that music touch into the fashion to right. kind of, you know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, that was a dope question, man. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying?
My next question might be dope, too. What artist do you have in mind that has that perfect mesh and marriage between music and fashion?
Man, that's hard to say. Like, a lot of the new artists, you know, people call their music all types of music or whatever. But I just adjust to it, and I just learn to love it, you know what I mean, for what it is, for what they're putting out there. So it's hard to say. You have, like, Lotto got a dope sense of fashion. music-wise, Sexy Red, mad raunchy, but I kind of like her vibe. Not right. fashion, not necessarily fashion-wise, because she, you know, she is what she is. But, I mean, I can't put my finger on it. A lot of people have different
taste.
Yeah.
But see, this wise goat vibes, this your truth. It's not nobody else's truth.
Right.
Like,
right.
for me, I would look at, on that fashion side, Michael Jackson was high end on fashion.
Right.
But it's like he had the music to go with it, though.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of his songs, he come out with the shiny stuff on the suits and all that. Like, right. you know what I mean? Like, yeah. that was his sense of fashion.
Yeah.
You got Andre 3000, you know. He make Idlewild. He showed a lot of fashion with the music, but his whole career, he always shows you fashion
true,
with the music.
True,
Prince,
right.
fashion with the music.
True.
So I was trying to see if you had somebody that had a perfect. That's like my
that,
top
like
three.
Even going that far back.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Like who do you think music and even fashion is just like they both is bold. Like the fashion can be just as bold as the music, or the music just as bold as they fashion. Like it's a perfect marriage between music and fashion.
Wow, man, I would say. Man, that's a hard one, too. I would say probably, like, the whole thing that Diddy was doing.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because he set, like, Diddy probably and then Jay-Z because he set trends. You know what I mean? Like, he set trends. And so did Jay. Like, Jay came out and said something against gold, and everybody stopped wearing gold.
Right.
Everybody started wearing platinum for, like, two decades. Like, I just started wearing gold again.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if you couldn't afford platinum back then, you wore white gold,
right.
So that was like a impact, like that's boom, changed the game up. Same thing with Puff, like when he came out with like Mary J, like Jodeci and Mary J Blige and them with the Doc Martin boots, the baseball short shirts, the baseball jersey, I mean, and so forth. That's what everybody was rocking,
right?
You know what
right.
I mean? So they kind of,
well, they was they calling kinda, the Nike's hoves.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so they changed. They literally, like, flipped the whole industry upside down. And it became, especially for Hove, it became, like, detrimental. Like, you don't want him to say nothing against your brand.
Right.
Because your brand will be basically dead almost. You know what I mean? Like,
I think we would have to throw Nelly in there then because he went crazy with the Air Force Ones. You know
yeah,
what I'm saying?
Yeah, true. There you go. Yeah, definitely,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, you know, I see the way you dress today, but, like, what's more of your fashion attire? You know, give me three ways, you know. Casual, like you chilling, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, like a relaxed day, you know. What's right. your fashion on that day?
Probably like sweats, like I came here today. Like
okay.
sweats, sneakers, you know, a T-shirt or something on top of the T-shirt. You know, something like that. Sometimes I mix it up, like I'll throw on sweats. I throw on a white business shirt, but I roll the sleeves up and just make sure the shirt is, like, just fresh out of the wash. Not
right.
ironed or nothing. So
right.
like wrinkled up, you know, just, it's just like whatever. Fashion is almost like it's a funny thing, right? Because whatever you wear, if you're comfortable with it, people are going to find a way to be like, yo, you know what? That shit's kind of dope.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or that's like, right, I'm going to try that. You know what I mean? Or they're going to twist up their own joint to it. But, yeah, that's, you know, like I go to the clubs or the lounges like this. If I have meetings, I throw on slacks instead of jeans and or like a full suit or whatever. But most of the time, if I'm just running around, I run around like this. When we're doing photo shoots for the magazine and stuff, I'm like in sweats and T-shirts.
Right.
But then, like, yesterday we interviewed Jay and Maquan. Shout out to Jay, FUBU.
FUBU.
FUBU. Shout out
or
to
you
Maquan.
You buy us, baby.
Absolutely. Shout out to Maquan. Maquan is the creator and executive producer of Godfather of Harlem. So when I got, when we got ready to get on the set to do the interview, I threw on like a suit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you change it up. It depends on the situation.
So let me ask you this, right? Because, you know, I did get to see, you showed me some behind the scenes footage of that.
Right.
Now, when you get somebody like this that's coming up, you know, to the magazine, do y'all always do an organic shoot? Like, do y'all set the scene? Do you suggest what the client should wear? Or, you know, we have this imagery idea for, you know, the cover. Like, right. What's the process? Or is that too much to give out? Or
No, I could give it out because it's a little bit of both, right? So, like, usually, like I said, fashion is almost like a person's thing, right? So, like, usually if we're doing a cover shoot, we let them, their stylists style them.
Right.
But if it's something we're doing, like, with the model shoots, you know, I leave it up to the stylists, like a Deborah Guignard. She's done Destiny's Child. Like, her list just goes on and on and on. So, it's like whatever she's going to put on them, I know it's going to be dope. It's right. going to hit that spot. You know what right. I mean? And then as far as the setup, like in the studio where we're shooting at or doing an interview at, I usually have an idea of what we're looking for, right? What we're looking to shoot. But then we're also open for ideas. Like yesterday, when we post the behind the scenes stuff, you'll see a lot that Marquand's brother, who also works on the set of Godfather Harlem, was directing him a lot. Yo, pose this way. Right. Now wear that instead of that. Put that on with that. Like, so, and then we just, you know what I mean? Because it vibes that way. It's like you get everybody's ideas and everybody's
concepts and stuff. You get that creativity flowing.
Yeah.
You know, I got a chance to work with Deborah Guignard as well. So right. I she'll tell you that day was like super creative. You had the cameraman, you had all the clients, the models, you know, all the staff. That was everybody just put their heads together, you know, because, you know, a lot of stuff changes sometimes too. Absolutely. So you got to go on to go, you know.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Yeah.
Like when we did the Birdman cover, we shot Birdman in Miami. They were down there for some little way. I don't know if it was a birthday party or something they were doing. We shot him in Miami. He comes on the set with this Gucci bag. It's like a one of one. He just got it made, specially made for him. In the middle of the shoot, he jumps up like, "Yeah, I'll be back." And we like, "Yo, we looking around like, what's going on?" This dude comes back with a stack, like a plastic bag full of money, $250,000, and he dumps it halfway in the Gucci bag and dumps the rest like out on the plastic on top of the bag. We were like, "Oh,
we ain't using no prop money. We using real money."
Yeah, yeah. He took that cover shoot to the whole, like almost everything we shot before then we deleted.
Right.
He took that cover shoot to the whole level, to the whole next level. Right. And that's what we came out with. So, yeah, I just, you know what I mean? Like, we just go with the flow because you could never tell. Like, if you don't want it, you don't use it. You know what I mean?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, you know, Birdman, he like that next level guy anyway.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
Every sit-down probably like a one of a kind. You know absolutely. What I mean? With Birdman.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
So how, like, how is it? Because everybody act different when they deal with clients, you know?
Right.
Have you ever been starstruck with a client before? I know you've been in the industry already, so you've been around a lot of them. You know, I give you a prime example. My favorite artist of all time is Rakim Alaw.
Right.
You know.
Right.
I go down to the show and prove, you know, the year before last, you know, and my enlightener, they brothers. So it's like, I meet them.
Right.
I don't just meet them. I chill with them. You know, to stay everything, you know, so it's like I got a full experience, you know, and he left me with a lot of jewels.
Right.
You know, I left with a lot of jewels. So I couldn't show that I was starstruck, but at heart, I was starstruck.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So, like, I know how to keep my composure, but I was starstruck. Was it anybody that you ever met during the magazine era?
Yeah.
That you was like, yo, I can't believe this going on.
Yeah. It happened to me twice, right? So it happened to me. With Toni Braxton, like when they were doing the Braxtons, and they had like they were premiering one of the seasons, like for the show, and so we come in there having this big dinner, and she walks in with the rest of her family, and I'm just sitting there like just dazed, like I can't even describe the feeling. I'm like, oh my God, this is Toni Braxton. I used to listen to her music in college and this and that and that. And she walked by, I swear to God, it was like I smelled her perfume. I'm like, oh my God, she's gorgeous.
Right.
And then I got a chance to take a picture with them, with the family later on. So I made my way from the end of the picture and got somewhere where Toni was and one of the other sisters was. And it was just like, You know, it was just like, yeah, I was starstruck.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, there was not too many words coming out of my mouth unless they were complimentary.
Right, right.
And then the other time that it happened to me was probably Ice-T and Coco. We were shooting Coco for a spread in the middle of the magazine. And Ice-T was there. He was always one of my favorite West Coast artists. Enough respect to him, Ice-T and Coco. And then
I'm
just sitting there and I'm bugging out. And I'm like, Ice-T is answering Coco's messages on MySpace. That was the MySpace days. And he's like, man, look at these dudes, man. They over here talking about, yo, Ice-T my boy and all that, but F him. Like, you bad, holler at me. And, he's answering them back. Oh, I'm bad. Why don't you buy my my calendar just came out. And I was just sitting there just, like, mesmerized at Ice-T and Coco.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, right. And it was, like, a different type of starstruck, but it was, like, the whole picture of how they vibe. Ice-T always proclaimed to be a pimp.
Right.
You know, he really lived it. He was living it on that level.
He acting like he Herb. buy my new cover.
He wasn't even mad. Like, yo, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was just like, yeah, you like me and all that. Well, buy my calendar. This and that. I'm like, yo, you wrote that? He was like, yeah. He turned the computer to me. I'm like, wow, okay, that's what's up.
Right, right. You
know? So.
Right. Yeah. So, what do you think some of the hardest, you did speak slightly on it, but what is the hardest challenge in the magazine game that you faced since, you know?
The hardest challenge is probably getting a distribution deal. You know what I mean? Like, you young, you black, you rambunctious, like, you know, some of your ideas sound crazy to these people that distribute magazines, all the big name magazines and everything. And then, you know, finally, it was like God brought this gentleman in my life that was in the magazine industry. And we sat down. He invited me to dinner. We sat down. You know, he's Steve Grogan. He wanted a lot of money to put the magazine, you know, to get us a distribution deal. But I told him I don't have that kind of money. I also told him, like, my vision, what I wanted to do, and I showed him the sample of the magazine that I put out. And he's like, you put that out by yourself? I was like, yeah. He's like, all right, give me some of those copies. And he took those, went and held a meeting on his own, invited me to the meeting a couple of days later, and that was it. They gave us a distribution deal with a little bit of money up front to help us to get the printing done. Not all of the money, but and that type of a deal was unheard of. You know what I'm saying? And there was another gentleman, John Blassingame. Steve Grogan was white, by the way. There was another gentleman, John Blassingame, who's black, and he's like old school. He's like the king of urban publishing. You know, called me up the first day in business and congratulated me. The first day our magazine came out, I said, your magazine on the stand. He calls me doctor. Congratulations, doctor. I seen your magazine on the stands, this and that. Want to meet with you. Maybe there's some things we could do. And, you know, other than that, the major hurdle from that point on then was just keeping the distribution.
Right.
Like when we put 50 Cent on the cover, you know, 50 Cent was like brand new. Nobody even really seen him. He just had, like, Go Shorty Is Your Birthday. That song was on, like, they were spinning that song 5-6 times in a club the same night.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, this is going to be it. Like, this kid is going to be dope.
Yeah, he came in like a smoking gun.
Killing it. Still killing it to today. You know what I'm saying? And when we put him on the cover, it was like, oh, this is not going to sell. This is from the distributor in a big meeting. All of them in the room. This is not going to sell. Look at this guy. No one knows him. He's dark skinned. You can't barely see his face. This and that. Like, the whole 9 yards, bro. And they threatened to drop us. I'm like, yo, please put it out. If it doesn't sell, I'm the one that paid to print it, right? Just put it out. If it doesn't sell, whatever the distribution cost is, I'll pay and y'all could drop us.
Right.
And that was our number one selling magazine. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
But see, like, it take a vision. And, like, basically what you did, you were sitting at a poker table at that point. Mm-hmm. You put all your chips in.
Right. I was scared though. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know.
You said, hey, I'll pay the distribution and y'all can drop me. You put all your chips in.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. So, and my heart was jumping out of my chest. I was sitting there scared. But I knew that it wasn't going to be what they said it was. And I knew that they didn't understand the game that we were in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And they didn't understand what that artist who people was just getting ready to know was about to do to the industry.
Because my next question was going to be, you know, when did you give yourself that look like, yeah, I'm, this is it. This is the one. But I was going, now my question is going to be rephrased to, was that the moment you started getting your respect?
I don't know, man. I think, like, from since we dropped the first cover with Jay-Z.
With Jay-Z, you guys already had your respect.
Yeah.
I'm saying from the distributors, because I know.
Oh, yeah, from the distributors.
Because I know dealing with music, you know, you can satisfy so many people.
Right.
But you can't satisfy those distribution companies. Like, that's really the bread and butter.
Right.
You know, on certain things, certain angles. So, that's what I meant. Like, you know, you felt like that was the day you got your respect from the distributors.
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. But then they wanted another one of those. You know what I'm saying? So first you can't satisfy them, and then you can't satisfy them. So now they wanted another one of those. And I'm like, this is anomaly. Like, this only, like, an artist like that only going to come, like once in a while.
Yeah, once in a while. Yeah.
That's not a, this is not an everyday dude that's just going to come out and just, like, all of a sudden he comes out, first the album, second album, he's doing a movie for the album. You know what I mean? Like, just doing mad things like that. Like, this is a different type of dude. It's a different type of animal.
Right. So, you know, how do you feel now, like, today, 2023, to be, like, the real competitor to the magazines that you already was thinking about? Like, I can't compete with these competitors. But, like, right now, you know, you either superseded some of them or your name stand right there with them,
right?
You know, no matter what. How do you feel having that, like, as of 2023?
I feel grateful, man. You know what I mean? Like, I feel grateful. Like, last night I came out of the photo shoot, and I'm standing, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning waiting for my car to pull up. And I was like, wow, man. I'm like, yo, thank you, God. You know what I mean? Like, thank you, God, for, like, putting me here, for giving me this opportunity, for, like, you know, putting the people around me that you put around me to make this all happen.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that's how I felt, man. I feel really, you know, I feel really, really grateful about it. I'm really thankful to God for that opportunity. It's a struggle. The struggle don't never stop, but what isn't a struggle, right?
Right.
Yeah, so.
Now, some companies, you know, they do sponsorships, they do give backs, you know, giveaways, things like that. Are those other things that we could highlight?
So you mean as far as like community service and things like that?
Like, yeah, like, you know, do you get the company, the brand, you know, involved in give backs, giveaways,
community
service and things that we could highlight on the show?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been doing that from since almost day one. Like, in school, I pledged a fraternity, Kappa Alpha Psi fraternity, and that's something they always, like, embedded into us as community service. You know what I mean? Like, I was that type of person even before I pledged, but that just took it to another level. So one of the places we used to do was a place called Inwood House in Manhattan.
Okay.
And Inwood House housed young girls from, like, age 11 to 17 that were pregnant. Some of their pregnancy is, like, you know, their older guys messing with them or whatever, or a kid their age, and they just happen to get pregnant and get kicked out of their home.
Right.
So they would house, like, those girls there. I think they had 75 girls at a time. Deborah also participated in that with us. And we would, you know, like, Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, we did dinners for them.
Right.
You know, just to make them feel special, right? We did, like, Valentine's Day, we'll bring flowers, do a fashion show, have dinners there for them or whatever. And we call the program Woman to Woman.
Right.
So us guys just used to come to set up, make everything look right, and then leave. And then, like, the first one I did, Wendy Williams hosted it. I forget the lady's name from the WNBA. She was a big star back then. She hosted it.
Dawn Stelly?
I think she played for one of the New York team. Deborah might remember her name, but I forgot her name. But, you know, so that's what we used to do, just let the ladies all talk to each other.
Okay.
And we would come back to clean up. And at times, the ladies left out of there with tears in their eyes. You know what I mean?
They felt appreciated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And worthy or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And another time where we stayed, I had Deborah put together a fashion show there, and I spoke to the people that ran the place, and I said, the girls, five of the girls that have the best grades in school, we're going to put them in a fashion show. But don't tell them, just wait till the end of the year or whatever, collect their report cards, see what they got. So long story short, we put the fashion show together. These girls are all pregnant now, right?
All
we
right.
pulled them backstage. Their friends in the front don't know nothing. We have regular professional models, 6 feet and better with them. They're all styled up, dolled up by Deborah, everything, everybody is. And the show starts, and they come out. The regular models come out, And then in between them is one of the five girls.
Oh, man, that was
awesome.
And when
the other girls seen them, bro, they lost their mind. And they, oh, my God. They going crazy, like crying, everything. So, you know, we do a lot of that, man. We go out Thanksgiving, feed people, help feed people. Definitely. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, I feel like that's important.
Yeah, that's very, very important, you know what I mean, to give back to the community and, you know, people, you know, that's in need, you know, especially the women. Homeless women, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, the men need it too. Don't get it wrong. Right. You know what I'm saying? But pregnant women that's homeless, you know, homeless with kids, you know, we definitely, you know, they the ones that's actually, you know, raising our future. So, you know, we got to make sure they secure. You know what I'm saying?
And that's the way we saw it. Like, they're raising a future. And we try to, even if we were just for that moment, just show them that there was another side to everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not just the hard times or you can get out of that hard time. You could grow out of that. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Right. So, I do want to ask you this. We talked a lot about the artists, you know. Let's talk about some of the models.
Right.
You know, speak on some of the models you work with, the magazine work with, or who you would like to work with.
So, some of the models, we worked with a lot of models. Some of them, unfortunately, I never got a chance to know their names.
Okay.
But one of the ones that sticks in my head is Esther Baxter. Like, I think one of her first publications was Floss Magazine.
Mm.
And then from there, Show Magazine and some of the other magazines noticed her. We did a bikini shoot, one of my guys in Florida did. And they noticed her, and then things just went on from there.
Right.
You know what I mean? But we were fortunate, man, to work with a lot of models. Some of them you see on TV. Love and Hip Hop or other TV shows. Some of them went on to become actresses.
Right.
Some of the guys, actors. Justin was on Boardwalk Empire. I forget Justin's last name, but he does a lot of stuff. Yeah. So you know, there's a lot. We've worked with like hundreds of models, and it's hard for me to kind of remember the faces and all the names.
Right. Right. Right.
You know what I mean.
But are there any particular models, male or female, that you would like to, you know, be like, you know what, if I had the chance to get in contact with their people or just line it up, or you know, somehow they come to us,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there any particular models or artists that mm-hmm. you could be like, yo, I wish they was on the cover?
Yeah,
coming from you.
Yeah, artist wise, there's a few I'm tossing around, but they're like from this young generation of rappers.
Okay,
you know what I mean. But model wise. I think the way we did it was the way we do it, or the way we did it was more authentic to me. And not to say nothing against the professional models, but it was like we went and found those diamonds in the rough that would probably not have otherwise gotten that chance.
See, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that because it's a lot of beautiful models,
absolutely.
But not just the beauty though. Some of them really, they got that craft down pat.
Right, right.
They really got it, you know. Because I be around a lot of models and I know with certain little things that you got to keep a secret if you know how to do it, because this particular skill set get passed down. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a lot of the younger ones that's coming in that got it and they could be that next it.
Right.
Oh, man, they get that gatekeeping situation going on. Right. They get the blockage or they get the older models hating and stuff, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's good that y'all give the diamonds in a rough a chance.
Absolutely.
You know?
Like, we'll be at shows sometimes in Fashion Week, and the show's over, and a model will run up. Oh, my God, you don't remember me. I'm like, nah, I'm sorry. Y'all was in your such and such issue, this and that. Y'all was the first one to let me do Walk on the Runway during New York Fashion Week, all that stuff, you know what I mean? So, and they move on, you know what I mean? Once they get that exposure, they get that confidence, they move on. And they go on and do, you know, bigger things or other things, which is really dope.
Right.
So
now that we're in a digital state, right, we talked about being in the digital world, online state of, you know, magazines, you know. I don't want to say goal, but, like, you know, what's the next step for Floss? You in Floss, you know.
So the next step for Floss is to get back to what we do best, and that's publishing. Just continue to publish, like bring revolutionary changes to the digital platform of publishing. You know what I mean? So in addition to the magazine, we're also going to be trying to sign deals with authors, certain authors, to put out their books digitally under Floss Publishing.
Okay.
And just do some different things within the digital magazine. You know, like there are a lot of things. I looked at a lot of digital magazine, and it's like, eh.
So you still feel like there's elevation that could be, you know, it's still I want to say elevation, but it's still a lot of innovative ways to go about online,
right?
Or digital printing, you know, because is it getting boring or is it like, you know, just something need to change? Because I'm starting to see that too.
Yeah, I think there's room. I think there's room for change or room for creativity or room for your flavor. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like something different, like whatever your flavor is. Not even nowadays. I mean, competition is not even just other magazines, but competition is also social media platforms. You know what I mean? Because you talk to an artist and probably everything that they can talk to you about, they've already posted.
Right.
So it's not really much else to say now unless you're very innovative with the interview.
Right.
You know what I mean? And get other things out of them that may not have been shared on social media yet.
Right.
Because once that happens, what's the use of doing the cover? Like, it doesn't, or even putting them in the magazine.
Right. I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
So how do you feel, you know, because I don't want to hold you too long.
That's all right.
But how do you feel your competitors feel about you? Because I know that you wanted to be that bridge between Vogue and GQ.
Right.
You know, have you got the chance to meet the owner of Vogue or GQ or people from those platforms and hear the little gossip or, you know, the talk? Every community got a community.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I know you in the magazine community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, how do you feel your competitors feel about you?
I think
black man right here.
Yeah, I think some of them, our closest competitors, some of them, we were sort of a headache to them. And some of the other editors in chiefs, right? Because they have all this big budget, like all this money to do whatever they do. They have the big budgets and everything. They have the big salaries and the whole big staff. But then here's this little company that's coming out with very creative covers, very creative articles, photo shoots, and then bridging hip-hop and fashion.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I think we were like a headache to them. A couple of people got into issues with their bosses in certain publishing companies. As far as like the GQs and the Vogues, I've never had that opportunity. But being picked up by Condé Nast was always one of my biggest goals. You know what I'm saying? Like to be that urban magazine underneath Condé Nast, just to even have access to some of their resources, which I think because they're so big, they don't realize some of the stuff that they take for granted or not using are really like big, you know what I'm saying? Are really like major. And somebody with my hunger and thirst can come in and just kind of like take that little, whatever they give us, and just flip that into something crazy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, you still got that hustler's mindset.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what part of the world, you know, you came up in, you know, and because maybe that can help us understand the music, you know, and the fashion and we don't need no crazy stories because we don't do that up here on Goat Vibes, you know.
Gotcha.
It's just like, give us a sense of, you know, how you was raised to be what you are.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, when I talk to people, I let them know it's the cheesesteaks, the tasty kicks, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's the dirty school kill punch water that we drink, you know? Like, it's that Philly, you know?
Yeah,
so, like,
no doubt.
You know, give us, like, you know, where you from and that earlier hunger for you that made you be like, I ain't got no choice but to do this. This is the direction I'm going.
Yeah, so I was born in Freetown, Sierra Leone, West Africa.
Okay.
That's where they had the diamonds, the quote unquote diamond wars.
Right.
Kanye and them rapped about it or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I was born in. And my family, you know, we were pretty well off. So there was like two classes, the haves and the have-nots. But then there are those who had more. So we were not the have-nots. So we were fine. My mother and father came to America. And they used to send me and my sisters clothes, like buy, you know, stuff and send it back to us. My grandfather was a minister. So he would just open the bags. We'll take pictures with the clothes on, and then he'll put everything back in the bags, and on Sunday he'll go give all our stuff away to people in the church.
Wow.
So me and my sister used to be tight about it, right? And
wow.
Yeah, it's funny. I showed a friend of mine a picture of myself from when I was a kid. I had on a three-piece suit. It's probably like 100 degrees in Africa. I had on a three-piece suit, and because they used to always take pictures of us in the clothes and then send it back to my mom and dad. And I'll have tears in my eyes. And that's because my grandfather, I remember that day, he had whipped my behind because they wanted me to wear like a regular shirt because it was so hot.
Right.
But I'm like, I'm not wearing that.
I'm wearing my suit. Y'all ain't giving this joint away.
Yeah, I'm wearing my suit. And that's that. So they finally gave in, let me wear it after whipping my behind, let me wear it or whatever. So I think that's where my my love for fashion came from. You know what I mean? And my mother, she just always dressed. Like, she walks into the room, she kind of just always shuts it down, even up to today. You know what I mean? So right. I think that's where my love for fashion came from. And my hunger came from growing up under that environment in Africa, right, with so many resources. Like, if you got hungry, you just ran into the backyard. There was an orange tree. There was a banana tree. My grandparents would hire somebody to climb the coconut tree. Like, all that was right there. And then coming to America as a kid, the first thing I remember was the cold, when that cold air first hit me. Because we got here, like, in the wintertime. Mm. And I never felt nothing like that before. And then living where we lived at, I had to learn the ways of the streets quick, even though I was, like, in third grade.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it went from, oh, you don't speak English, this and that and that. And after a while, it was like, boom, all right, now you got to learn to fight.
So that was a big culture shock for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you couldn't go outside in your backyard and pick no fruit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
right.
So you really had to figure out how you're going to eat if you didn't have it.
Right, exactly. Okay. You know what I mean? Wow. And then, like, going to school and not being able to
the
speak
language
English.
Barrier.
Right, the language barrier. Kids tease you. Only way to stop that was to fight.
Right.
So I learned how to fight. And then I never became a bully, but I just learned how to fight. And then once they, like, okay, he going to fight you back no matter what, the teasing stopped.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that instilled in my head that, okay, this is the way to do things.
Right.
You got to put your foot down. Somebody step to you, you got to crush them. You know what I mean? And all that, which and at the same time, I always kept that fashion sense. So I always paid attention to the older guys. I grew up in Brooklyn. Always paid attention to the older guys in Brooklyn. They always had some kind of fashion going on, and I just, like, ran up with that. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, Brooklyn, where is that, man?
Yeah.
You talking about clothes and all that and stuff. I mean, yeah, uptown Harlem and all that stuff too, but Brooklyn, man, they definitely just, it's like a different flavor over there, man.
Yeah,
what I mean? And you got to be tough in Brooklyn, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you definitely got to be tough in Brooklyn, man.
Absolutely.
One more thing. So, say we got a young, well, y'all say y'all select the models, right? Mm-hmm. Say you got a young artist or a young model, you know, what will be the criteria if they never, this they first adventure in trying to get publication and they just stumbled across and they don't even know how big this floss is yet, but they might get a shot if they had these criteria met. What would that be?
So even if it's not floss, right, what I always tell, like, new artists and or people trying to do something new, just do almost like what I had to do, right, is just learn about it. So you want to be a model, right? A lot of, you can't just be a model just because you're pretty. You can be, and you don't have to be 6 feet to really be a model. There's so many different things that you could model.
You could be a hand model, jury.
Exactly, right? So nowadays with YouTube, I would suggest they go on YouTube and just watch a bunch of videos and just learn how to walk, learn how to do whatever. If you're trying to be an artist, listen to all the other artists. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, I got people that run up and, like, yo, I'm the dopest. Everybody on my block tell me that. Okay, well, has anybody outside of your block told you was the dopest?
Right.
You know what I mean? You're the fastest runner. Have you raced against people in the Bronx yet?
Right.
Have you raced against the fastest runner in Jersey yet, in Philly yet? Then you don't know if you're the fastest. So I would say, like, research it. You know what I mean? Like, go YouTube. There's Google. All this stuff is mad easy today. Like, you can just Google these things and just learn about it. Whatever it is that you want to do, you can do it. You just have to learn about it. And then when you get started, you're going to fail a couple of times. You're going to run into the brick wall a couple of times. So you just got to get up, dust yourself off, and try again. If you did something and didn't work, you do it differently.
What type of story would compel one of your editors, you know, if or yourself, you know, if your editors bring something to you that's fresh, you know what I'm saying, but it's not really like how the distributor thought about 50, you knew about it,
right,
you know, but this person, do your editor have to be that confident like you were about it, or do that story have to be compelling, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of have like an open door policy with those things, like bring the story, the idea, whatever, and we'll work it to where we can use it. And if we can't use it, then we both got to be, you know, able to be like, well, all right, let's put it to the side for now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or that's not going to work, or it's not our our thing. Like, our thing is flaws. So if you're bringing me a story about something that ain't flaws, like, I'm not going to do it. You know what I mean? Like, one of our editors had a story about a young kid who just started a clothing line, and she just thought, like, this kid was just, like, the most amazing, had the website and everything. But then I went on the website, and I'm like, he only has one T-shirt right now.
Right.
And that's not a problem, but let's put him to the side.
Until and you build this inventory.
Yeah, because I have other kids his age or younger that have more than one T-shirt. It doesn't make them a phenomenon because they have a website and one T-shirt.
Right. You know what I mean?
And again, there's no disrespect to that kid, because tomorrow that kid could be like the next biggest designer in the world. But right now he's not what we're, you know, what we're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been giving us so much jewels this whole entire interview. You know what I mean? I really appreciate it. Just one more question. You know, it's not even a question, it's really for a statement, you know.
Right.
It might be a young lady, a young man, or somebody of age, mm-hmm. you know, they might be stuck amongst somewhere you was on your journey.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You the GOAT. You the GOAT of this. You the GOAT of this for us.
Thank you.
You know
man.
What I'm saying?
It.
You
I
are, you know, and I appreciate you for being here, but you definitely the GOAT to us when it comes to, like, you have a GOAT in the urban publications.
Right.
To you.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But to us, that would be you, because I'm a journalist and I write.
Right.
And I know everybody I speak to, that's where they want to be at. They want flaws, right. flaws, flaws, flaws. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, what I got to do to be on flaws? You know, it's everybody I speak to, when they're doing a magazine run, they trying to figure out how to get in flaws. So you are GOAT.
I appreciate that.
You know what
man.
I'm saying? Yeah, you for the culture awesome. To us.
Thank you, man.
You know?
Thank you.
So what advice would you have, and it could just be so basic, but what advice would you have for somebody that's along your journey,
mm-hmm.
male or female, young or old, you know, what would be that one advice? And it only can be one piece of advice. And it's like, that's the only thing you could give them. Cause you know how sometimes you only got that 5 minutes to give right. somebody some jewels.
Yeah.
This, that 5 minutes right here. Like,
right.
you know, what would you tell somebody that's like literally in your same steps?
Yeah. I would say whatever you want to do, just do it. You know what I mean? The most important thing is to learn about it. Look at the people who did it before you, right? Like when I started Floss, I looked at all the people that did magazines before me, and I looked at all their fonts, and there was something all their fonts had in common. I looked at the way they did things, the way things were structured. So just like whatever you want to do, just look back. Like if you want to rap, if you want to be a model, find a couple of models or a couple of rappers that you look up to as role models, and then take a piece of them and put it together for yourself.
Right.
And take a piece of them and make it your own, right? You don't necessarily have to mimic anything, but just make it your own. But most importantly is, like, if that's what you want to do, no matter what happens, you just keep going. And when I say keep going, doesn't mean, like, keep going to the studio, smoking weed, like, drop a verse and then fall asleep and then studio time is up and then you do it again tomorrow. That's not keep going. Like, that's not a serious – that's not work ethics.
Right.
You know what I mean? And if you don't know what work ethics is, you got to get around somebody that – works hard, like they just constantly working, and then you'll look at yourself like, oh damn, I thought I was working,
right?
Getting up at 11 in the morning and going to sleep at 6 in the evening, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that would be my advice, man, is just keep going and realize what it takes to get there.
Definitely.
And also keep in mind that there's no one that is successful that didn't go through that path, right? Yesterday I spoke to two gentlemen that are multimillionaires right now. And one of the biggest things that I picked up in the interview is one of them ate twice a week when they didn't have no money, when they wanted to come up, ate twice a week. And it was chicken wings and pork fried rice and 50 cent beer. And any other time that he had an extra couple of dollars to eat something differently, stomach hurt. The other gentleman was on ramen noodles, sleeping on people's floors.
Right.
He's a multi. He's paying people millions right now to do what he hires them to do.
Right.
So keep going.
Definitely. Definitely. Man, y'all hearing it first right here. Paris, CEO, chief executive, Floss Magazine, man. Sent right here, Goat Vibe interviews, man. Make sure y'all go to floss.com. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's the website, flossmagazine.com. The social media is at Floss Magazine.
Yeah, make sure y'all do that, man. Tap in. So now let's just say this, though. You know, if somebody wanted to reach you, you got to email. You got a secretary email that they can, you know, just say, hey, Paris, I love your story.
Yeah. My email address is just paris@flossmagazine.com.
Okay, definitely.
Yeah, paris@flossmagazine.com. Or shoot us a message on social media, you know.